Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You are now listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 17, hosted by myself, The Last Skeptic, and this is a very, very special episode because it's the first ever international episode recorded live in Hollywood in Los Angeles. And it features two good friends of mine, the wonderful Georgia King and the writer of the new Thor film, amongst many other fucking incredible things that he's written, Eric Pearson. As you may notice, there is a new beat underneath this intro, and that is because my brand new album, This Is Where It Gets Good, is out on September 29th. So make sure you go onto iTunes right now and pre-order it. Go pick it up, and you'll get this song immediately, like right now. So make sure you're cop that. It features Matt Wills. This song's called Keep It Simple. The album's called This Is Where It Gets Good. Go onto iTunes. Go find that. You're already on iTunes if you're listening to this, most likely anyway. So go cop that. It made me really happy. Enjoy the episode. It's fucking incredible.
So,
what a great way to start.
This is going to finish later. No one's going to find that out. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 17 of the Thanks for Trying podcast, and the first ever international episode of the podcast. I'm super excited about it. Broadcasting from LA with my very special guests, Georgia May King and Eric Pearson. Tiny little claps.
Tiny claps. I have massive hands. Massive, fun fact.
Tiny.
You ready? Do you want a real clap? Hands. Ready?
Go on. Oh, that's good. And that's good for testing the mic too, because it's just like
explode.
Yeah, that's it. Thank you guys. I was thinking on today, I don't think I've actually, even though both of you are old friends of mine, I don't think I've ever seen you guys together. And you're both friends.
Well, you were mildly. Easy now. Easy.
No, we just discussed the fact that we used to be in touch a lot, and then since the last time I saw you, you didn't have ready?
Oh.
A house.
A house.
An true. Australia trip.
a temporary residence in Australia.
A dog called Goblin.
Yes.
Goblin. A wife, no less.
Not so true.
Last on the
so
list, a wife.
Definitely friends, but yeah. His life took him to places.
But yeah,
places.
Last year was fast.
I bet
you've done a
so
bunch.
Exciting.
Because Australia, of course, you were writing, filming, whatever you can describe it, and I'll edit it accordingly.
Thor Ragnarok, the third Thor.
How do you say Taika Waititi?
Taika Waititi.
I love him, but I'm such a huge fan. Boy is one of the most beautiful films.
Boy is cool. But I love Hunt for the Wilder People was my favorite movie.
It's an absolute joy.
And I didn't want to like it that much because I felt like I was kissing his ass when I told him. But like that movie was
beautiful,
perfect. Yeah.
What we do in the shadows?
Oh, so good.
Dream.
Yeah, brilliant.
Tell us everything. Let's just talk about Taika Waititi.
Yeah, for those that don't know, like, and for Marvel fans alike, so he's the director of the new Thor film Ragnarok, and Eric has been working on that, which is super fucking exciting. And that's all I do when we're not recording a podcast is talk to him and try and get spoilers out of him, of which I get none. So this is really exciting. So please explain away.
What can I say? But a Taika I can talk about as being hilarious and awesome, and like what I think like epitomizes him is like our first day shooting. It was like our first week shooting, first day outside, and it's like 7 a.m. and it's kind of raining, and everyone's like kind of in a bad mood, like, oh shit, first time we're outside, of course it's gonna be raining, this is gonna screw up our day, blah,
where
blah,
were
blah.
You
in like the what was it called, I forget the name of like the stages and the studios, but in Gold Coast, like,
okay, yeah. On the Gold Coast,
yeah. So we're outside and everyone's kind of bummed, and then I start hearing this music. And I look, and it's Taika in wearing all denim with an umbrella and a boombox, just going around from to every department, just kind of dancing. And just, like, within 30 minutes, everybody was just like, oh, this is, no, everything's in a good, we're in a good place. Everything's going to happen, like, go fine, we're all in a good mood. And then the rain cleared up maybe, like, an hour later.
Yeah. That's honestly everything I've wanted to hear. My eyes just welled with happiness.
Yeah.
I just got so happy hearing that.
Georgia, have you had a director that's done that for you?
Got a worn all denim and carry boombox and umbrella. No, but Jody Hill did share his mini scooter once to take me from one. It's not quite the same down the hallway.
So, and this is Jody Hill, writer and director of
season one of Vice Principals.
Okay, season one, and of course Eastbound and Down, and a bunch of other stuff.
This way.
Yeah, I think he felt sorry for me because I messed up an improv. Attempt in one of the scenes with Danny. I just made this weird noise instead. I sort of got flustered and went, "Eshmer."
Wait, can you do that noise again?
Eshmer. And it was so amazing. We laughed so hard. We were walking down. Jody's incredible, and his camera movement is so precise and awesome. And they treat their projects all in a sort of movie way, so it's not like, oh, we're doing a comedy, let's do fun silly cheap shots. It was like a beautiful setup where we were walking, Danny and I were walking down a hallway, and he had it so precisely that I wasn't to say a line until I hit a certain doorway. But then we were like, I was like, hey, Danny was like, I'm gonna do this take, and I was like, can I try something? You're like, no, you're a caged animal, you can't improv. And then they were like, just kidding, go for
they
it.
They called you a caged animal?
Yeah, they were no, they were just taking the piss, because like that's all they do is like play, and they're so generous, and they let you do so much, despite the fact that they write upwards of 50 drafts per episode. They're so generous about letting you play with things, and it's insane.
That's right.
So then Danny goes and does a wee bit of improv, and I hadn't hit my door yet, so then I panicked and just went, "Shmir." And we just, in the story, it was in season one, we just had sex on a bus.
But
so I did this weird noise, and then they took the piss out of me so heavily for that he felt sorry for me and let me use a scooter down a hallway.
Great.
He went, I was literally like a child, like, man, take my
Sick.
Scooter, try.
Yeah. Related to, which obviously we're going to talk about quite a bit anyway, obviously, is the success of season one of Vice Principals, which has been fucking amazing, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And, of course, the upcoming season two, which is incredible, because I saw the trailer the other day and we were cheering at the TV and all that stuff, obviously, and driving around LA as we have been over the past 2 weeks, seeing your face just everywhere, which is insane. Like, we're seeing that poster of the wrapped around buses. We saw the bus one the other day where you're sitting on a bus. They've got like, it's a wraparound.
Have you not seen that? I haven't seen that.
I've been out of town. I just got back and almost drove into a pole because I saw a poster, not just because I got back to LA.
Anyway.
LA driving.
Wait, so you noticed that and then immediately pulled out? You saw it on the way and just pulled off?
I mean, the 9,000, this is the 9,000 building that Eric's talking about, which is ginormous.
Yeah, there's a giant building with this Vice Principals poster.
It's super cool.
Yeah, your face, Danny, the whole cast.
It's so good because it has the whole lot of us, the gang.
It's great.
I mean, there's a couple people missing, so that are brilliant. But there's a lot of us in that, and it's a kind of cartoon vibe.
Mad Magazine kind of feel to it. Yeah.
So I had to take a picture, and I sent it immediately to my family group text. waiting for a response, waiting for a reply. It'll come soon.
Has anyone written unsubscribe yet in the group?
Unsubscribe.
My dad has literally never texted on the chain. I don't think he understands it.
My parents don't know how to text either. My mom doesn't own a cell phone.
Oh, wow.
That's amazing.
She's a better human being than us.
Yeah, she also thinks it's like super rude for anybody to be talking on a cell phone in public.
Right.
Which is like...
Yeah.
Like she'll be like in the grocery store or anything. Like, it's definitely not like a it's I admire it in some ways, but like, it's also like, this is the world.
It's a lot. Did you see that cool, what was it? It was a long time ago. That photographer took out, removed from his photographs electronic devices. Did you see those?
No.
It was like this amazing montage of family dinners, but everyone's just staring at their hands and like weddings, and everyone's just staring down. It's so bleak.
Well, you perform live. Do you look out and see a bunch of cameras up?
like a bunch of phones.
I don't think anyone wants to take photos of me, so I think that's all right. I get away with it.
Okay.
But I mean, sometimes I see people just on their phones anyway, and I'm like,
a little bit of a dance
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I don't mind so much if I'm DJing, but if I'm performing with a full live band, I'm like, you should kind of just watch this, please. Like,
yeah.
I have called people out. Like, there was a gig I did. I just had a whole bottle of Patron with me on stage, and I was with the band, and I was just drunk, and I drank a whole like half bottle, and I was like, get off your fucking phone. Like, just started shouting at people.
That's brilliant.
Yeah, too right. I think people had my back anyway. They're like,
yeah,
whatever, it's all my mates.
My favourite gigs are when there are no gigs. I'm trying to sound cool.
Oh, you don't need to try.
My favourite gigs are when phones aren't allowed. I fucking love it. You're just there with everybody. It's just the best.
I know. And I really have to force myself to not be on my phone, because I'm on it all the time, too much to my girlfriend's annoyance. And like, I just, it is so much part of our lives.
Yeah.
And I hate it. I hate how necessary it is all of the time. And what do I actually gain from checking it all the time anyway?
Nothing.
Well, it's the I don't know. I'm about to like spout some half drunk dumb science, but like, you know, it's the release of that tiny bit of dopamine every time your phone
tiny
buzz.
Bit. It's actually
yeah.
a bunch. I just wrote I've been writing, Eric.
Go on.
I just for research for something I've just written, your dopamine spikes by 13% when you get notifications.
Yeah.
So 13% is like doesn't sound that much. That's actually the amount you
get.
But
if you're getting it like every 5 minutes, you're just like, yeah.
But it's
more.
Huge. 13% spike is what you'd expect on your wedding day.
Wow.
Oh, really?
That's fucking nuts. Yeah. That's nuts. Every day you go up and down. No wonder we're all still unstable.
Yeah, absolutely mental. Yeah.
I just, as I said to you guys, I just got back from vacation.
Yeah.
And didn't have my phone on me, and it was the I didn't. I mean, not that I've even got any fucking text from anyone, but I mean, I was like, oh, I don't have friends, but I didn't have my phone on me for pretty much a week. Didn't take my laptop out of my bag.
Great.
For a week.
So good.
Didn't watch shit.
Did
and
you do
I
some
feel
handwriting?
Brilliant.
Did you do some like journal writing?
I journaled. I like drew in watercolor. I didn't do any writing at all.
You were in Cape Cod.
Yeah.
Did you see any whales?
No.
There's whale
I did see one white snake, which was extremely exciting.
That's a euphemism.
Hey, I will.
So more than one?
No, I had kayaks and a freshwater lake.
Sick.
I did kayak. I was like, I've literally just come back. So yesterday, which is nuts,
yeah.
I kayaked out. I shouldn't even tell the story. But I kayaked out to this beautiful lake. The sun was going down. It was unbelievable. It was so peaceful. And because I was with a group of people and I wasn't with them kayaking. I was on my own in the middle of this huge lake. And then I let one go.
Mm-hmm.
And I farted in the plastic of kayak and my buttocks. Mm-hmm. Like it smacked and ricocheted across the water.
Oh, yeah.
It was
reverberated.
Like,
so it's like Jurassic Park. So we can get like a little ripple. It's coming.
Oh my god.
That's my that was my holiday.
Did you feel so free? Did you feel just like,
I laughed so hard and
yeah.
then I ashamed of myself kayaked home
yeah.
for being such
did
a
dolphins
child.
Arrive because of the sonar or something?
No,
I feel like fish should have like
that's when I saw the white snake.
Whoa.
That's great. How long were you there?
A week, but it
a
felt like an eternity. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I legitimately cried tears of sadness and happiness on the
mm-hmm.
flight home.
Yeah,
but fuck, I was so fucking happy. That was so amazing.
Being in nature is like I need, you know, I miss it. I miss
yeah.
doing nature-y things. Being in London, you don't get much nature.
Yeah, what's the closest? Like, I'm going to get out in the woods or out.
There are some of them. Like, you've got Hampstead Heath, and like you know, there are lots of little woods around, and we do have lots of good parks. But
yeah,
for some, you know,
though.
It's different. It,
you don't feel like you're getting lost.
Yeah, exactly. You can always see a skyscraper.
Yeah.
I grew up in the middle of nowhere. We had one neighbor in Devon. And he wore a red boiler suit, red overalls. And I was like, oh no, we don't need to be American, do we? He's British. Red boiler suit. And I just see him. He's literally the shittest farmer that ever existed. He just walk around his farm, and I just watch him. He just throw shit into the hedge, just like pick
so
up.
Literally
a bit.
Shit. Yeah.
Oh no, like a bit of like broken machinery. I just
right.
put
oh,
it in the hedge.
His actual
dead
shit.
Sheep. Throw it in the hedge.
Great. Shit in his hand. Throw it in the hedge.
We were actually talking about this yesterday. Like, have you ever seen this clip of Gary Lineker in the middle of
no.
FA Cup final, whatever it was? And he must have really needed a shit. So he literally shat in his hand, pulled it out of his shorts, and then threw it on the ground and carried on playing.
Is this a real thing?
It's a real thing.
I'm not up on.
Yeah, no, this is like in, this is like the 80s.
And evidently not either, because you didn't even tell me what the clip was. You went, have you seen that clip of Gary Thicke? Yeah, I immediately went, no.
It was like 1980, it was like really old. But a lot of people didn't really know it, what it, he was doing until years later when he got interviewed about it. It was like, yeah, that like time I was did a shit. And
just pulled it out of my
in the middle of a football match.
In the middle, yeah, live on TV.
Who's the marathon runner? Paul, what's her name?
Radcliffe.
When she was doing a marathon, just British, not pissed, mate. She did a big shit, and then carried in. I think she won, got the gold.
Like in her pants, or did she?
She just crouched down, did a jobby, as my mum would call it, and then. Oh, did you do a jobby? And then ran and won.
She won the marathon?
Yeah, man. She's fast as shit.
That is... What's the... Never mind. I was looking for a word and I lost
it. So what have we covered so far? White snakes. Yeah. Shit.
Shitting.
Farting in a kayak.
Yeah. Back to you, Eric.
Sorry, this is the semblance of the host.
Coming from Hollywood.
That's it. Okay. Live from Hollywood. Shitting. tell me more. Tell me what you can tell me about Thor, because the trailer is. Georgia, have you seen the trailer yet for Thor?
No, mate. I was in Cape Cod, but my God, am I going to watch it?
It's really good. Really good. It's so good.
Oh, I can't wait.
There's like flying horses and shit.
Am I allowed to ask questions?
It's so funny
because I feel like there's more humor going into. Am I wrong in thinking that like Guardians was very funny and like Taika?
It is. I would say it's funnier. Like
does it have humor in it?
Yeah. Mm. If anything, it was like we were. Yes.
Yeah.
Just like so scared. It's the Marvel, yes, the Marvel Studios so NDAs are
okay,
so.
Okay.
But no, like I think also just kind of the character of Thor from the beginning. Our approach was he always had a bit of that like faux Shakespeare speak. And was very serious and kind of like from the kingdom, and we were kind of being like, well, he's spent a bunch of time hanging around Downey now, like he's been on Earth a bunch, he's been kind of a bit of the odd man out, and he's a smart character, he's gonna pick up stuff and be and the end of the last movie was him turning down the throne to be like go find a greater purpose. So I think this was, we tried to start it out in a place of him a little bit more of a lone adventurer who's been kind of honing his own purpose and personality and Taika always goes for the laugh. Like if there's a laugh available, then he'll go for it. And sometimes we had to pull back just to be like, no, this is a serious plot point. We can't joke over this one. Yeah. We need to get this right. And he was good with that. He was also like really good with the fact that normally on every other movie of his, he does my job. And Marvel brought me in to write the script, and he was extremely like cool and welcoming, and it was like we, you know, I did my drafts and we worked together to kind of get it, and then like on the day he'd super good with actors, everybody was just happy, it was just a really happy kind of awesome. Fun set.
How many people were writing on it?
It was just me from the day that I got there. It was just me.
Amazing.
Was there already a draft?
There were a couple before, but I was pretty much told to start over.
Whoa.
Yeah, and it was like...
I thought there'd be a gang of people working on
that. Well, Marvel kind of has its own gang. Like, Kevin is the president. He's, like, the creative captain of...
And it's Feige, not Feige, as I was saying, for about 5 years.
Or, you know, Kevin Feige. He's, like, the architect of kind of everything. And the way they run the company, there's, like a trinity at the top that's... Kevin and then Lou D'Esposito, who's the co-president with him. That's a lot of like physical production stuff, and Victoria Alonso, who is head of post-production and VFX and all that. And they like, they're just like a super team, a super trio. All of whom are awesome and nice. But then for every project, because they're looking at everything, they have like a lieutenant producer on that who's creative, working with the director and the writer. So you always feel like you've got support and you've got people to talk to and you've got people to bounce ideas off of. But yeah, part of why we haven't seen each other forever is like when this happened, like they start date was looming, they called me 2 Christmases ago and was like, we need you to start working January 1st.
Why?
And I was in that office every day, like my weekends were like getting to work at home on Sunday.
Wow, was that and was it quite a lot of pressure having such a huge franchise?
Yeah.
Because it's got such a huge fan base too, and like these are like major
and a line to straddle continuously because you have to follow the plot lines of a billion other strands going on.
Like the mandates coming in of like we're using these characters, we're returning these characters. Like we need a couple because like they've been building that universe since 2008. So like we need certain things to happen. To set up what's going to happen in all the Avengers movies and whatever's coming next. And that was actually where Taika was his worst. I remember being so stressed out and having so much pressure and writing in that office and him just sitting there like playing the guitar in the corner. And I just looked at him and I was like, dude, how are you so relaxed right now? Like I feel like we're so screwed because I'm just like, I put so much pressure on myself.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, I figure, you know, no matter what, we're going to make a movie. Either it's going to be really great, it's going to be really awful. If it's really awful, then I'll go live on my farm in New Zealand. And I was like,
great.
What?
Great. Oh my God.
And then in my head, I'm like, I don't have a farm in New Zealand. What am I supposed to do if that happens? But fortunately, like, I've been able to see some cuts recently, and it's... I'm really, really happy with it. Yeah. Like, I wish more than anything. That's why doing these podcasts feel so dangerous to me, because I'm like on the
you
verge
haven't,
of like,
you haven't
vomiting
said anything.
Plot and character stuff, but like I wish I could.
So what one thing that you I'm guessing you can talk about, but feel free to just veto it and just say no if it's too much, is obviously people know that Cate Blanchett's in it. What was it like just being around wonderful like talents like that on set?
She's the cool, like everybody was. But I personally have been like a huge Cate Blanchett person since like Pushing Tin and Elizabeth came out the same year, and I was like, that person's great, and that's the same person from the other thing. Like,
amazing.
I can't believe it. And then you meet her, and it's just like, it's impossible not to be intimidated. Like, I think that's some people will say Meryl Streep. I think that's the best actress on earth, personally. Cate Blanchett, I think, is so awesome.
Yeah.
So it was impossible not to be intimidated, and she's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
She
I
was
love
like really,
that.
And she was so cool. And I felt like I hindered her ability to be even cooler just by me being so starstruck.
Yeah.
And like I don't know, there was like one time, kind of like the first meeting that we had. It was just about a kind of important scene. And I hadn't really ever talked to her before besides like hello, and it was one of those meetings where I was like, this is one of my times to like step up. I should be talking more because I
so right here we had a little technical difficulty, so I thought I'd interject and just let you know that the end of the story involved something hilarious happening with Cate Blanchett, which Eric is going to kind of get back into now.
I know.
All right, we're back in. You guys can continue debating on Bloody Marys. sorry, but I had first technical difficulty to out of my head of Thanks for Trying podcast in 17 episodes, purely because I have my producer Seb here because we're in LA. So sorry for interrupting your story. Probably none of it got heard, but it involved a creepy Cate Blanchett.
I wouldn't say creepy. I would say calculated. Had a moment where she had fun, which she scared me.
That's great though. Yeah. It just shows like how cool she is.
She's just the sweetest person. Like whenever there's like a couple like big crowd scenes, and she's got her own like kind of vocal warm ups and stuff. And then when it was like that, she would like lead the crowd. Like
that's
this
awesome.
Is like this is what I do. You guys want to join in? Go ahead. Mm-hmm. And then Taika would get out there because he's
big,
you know.
Big
and character. Yeah, and like they would just kind of have it was she's just all part of the fun. Like but everybody on that, like Ruffalo was just energy and hilarious.
So that was actually on my list of things I wanted to talk to you about. Let me move that, is that you told me a story that isn't spoiler related about Mark Ruffalo, about about when you met him many, many years ago. Before you'd worked with him. Yeah, and I felt like Georgia would appreciate this story. So I thought, how about you retell it to her?
All right, I will.
Please.
So when I was first out here, my first manager ever, I was like 23 or something, brought me to a Hollywood party.
Whoa.
At like a big Hollywood party. And I was just completely out of my element. But I somehow befriended this actor who is just the ultimate schmoozer. And I told him that I'd just been signed. And I don't know, maybe he wanted something from me or maybe he was really nice. But like, I was like, I'm going to stick with this guy because he knows how to talk.
Great.
So I'm being led around and letting just this guy talk. And we end up in a conversation with some people and Mark Ruffalo. And this is like right after You Can Count on Me. In my mind, I'm thinking like this guy, like this is the guy.
I love me some Ruffalo.
Oh yeah, he's a great actor and a great person. So this guy that I've befriended, ultimate schmoozer, just kind of jumps on him. Is like, Mark, I saw you in this Neil LaBute play. Maybe I don't know if he was like some. I saw you in some play, New York. You're great, and this guy's talking and he's complimenting and he's talking and you can see. Mark's just kind of raising his finger, just trying to get a word in. And this guy's just complimenting. He just wants to say that your work was fantastic. And I mean, I don't know what else he was supposed to do. And he was like, Ruffalo says, I mean, thank you so much, but I wasn't in that play.
Oh, my God.
And this guy went, ghost
Hollywood.
But meanwhile, in my mind, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about Kenneth Lonergan's This Is Our Youth. Mark Ruffalo was on that. I couldn't afford tickets when I was in New York, but my buddies went to see it, and they said it was amazing. And they also told me that it smelled like they were really smoking weed on stage. So oh. I, in my mind, I'm like, this is my chance. I'm like, I interject. I'm like, I think you're actually talking about This Is Our Youth, but Kenneth Lonergan, I saw that, full lie.
Amazing. And now the underdog becomes the schmoozer.
Yeah. And I was like, you were amazing. And then I asked, were you guys smoking real weed on that? And I kind of bailed everybody out of the awkward situation. And I felt like this was great. So then we're in Australia and I'm sitting down with him. I was like, hey, this is a weird thing to bring up, but like, we met before, and I kind of started telling him the story, and he goes, and he remembered. He goes, and I wasn't in the play, and you were the guy who ended. And I was just like, it blew both of our minds.
That's amazing.
I was just.
How many years ago was that then?
It must have been 2003 or 2004.
And he remembered after all the interactions that a Hollywood actor has.
And how many people probably tell him like a billion compliments every day.
Yeah.
Ruffalo.
To be the Ruffalo.
I just watched him in Spotlight recently. I hadn't seen Spotlight. So fucking hell, that's a great film. But also just watching Mark Ruffalo as a serious character actor, like, he is fucking brilliant.
He's amazing. Do you see The Normal Heart as well?
No, I haven't seen that.
Ryan Murphy directed it. It's a play originally. A play. Pick up a penguin, guys. It's a play. I'm not having a stroke. But Ryan Murphy directed the TV movie of it, and it's amazing.
Oh, it was on HBO.
With Matt Bomer. HBO.
That's
one of those things that, like, from being in Australia for all that time, there's, like, a bunch of cultural things that happened, like watching things that happened that I just didn't have access.
I mean, it was before you went to Australia, but don't tell Ruffalo.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
How sure?
100% sure. I couldn't get more sure.
It happened in 1997.
That's what I'm sure.
Also on my list, it's coming from interacting with incredible actors, to you, Georgia. That's my tangent strand. That was
loved
me
it. I
reaching
that
over. It was so
like
smooth.
A DJ.
It's like a mixing. To the first episode of Vice Principals,
yes,
where your special guest was Bill Murray, obviously a hero of mine
and mine, sir.
And you got to work with him. You got to chat to him.
Got
to smell him.
He smells so good.
Oh my God. Does he really, or are you just...
I'm just kidding. He smells like shit. Do you know what's so great is I packed my bags to move to Charleston, and I watched Groundhog Day in the background. It's one of my favourites. And the next day when I arrived, I was given a bike, and I was told to go to a baseball game with Danny and Jody and everybody. And we were in Bill Murray's baseball box because he owns the River Dogs, the local thing. So it was my first ever baseball game. Yeah. And I was sat in front of the Murray, having just watched him packing bags. And we were there because Danny wanted to like chat to him about being guesting in the show. And they were randomly doing an Anthony Bourdain episode. No. So I got to sit awkwardly so I wasn't in the way of the shot.
Yeah.
I was in the camera otherwise. I just got to like be near Murray within 24 hours of packing.
Bill Murray and Anthony Bourdain.
Insane.
Jesus.
I also like? Just dislodged a bit of lettuce that was stuck in my throat, guys. I'm really happy. I've been working quietly on that for about 20 minutes. And now we
you
talk.
Did well.
That's what that noise is.
I just thought...
That's what that is. That's been happening for about 15 minutes.
I'm going to basically enhance that sound. And then I'm going to repeat it.
Georgia.
I'm going to replace all of your vocals with just that noise.
Just from what I'm going to hijack. I'm going to hijack your thing for a sec. Just from watching this, do you do voiceover stuff? Because I think you would be really good at like voice stuff.
Thank
and like,
you.
Like,
I would love to do voiceover.
Whiskers.
Hey, what should I sell, guys?
No, I mean like train arriving on stuff, like animated movies and stuff like that.
I'd fucking love to do that.
I feel like
yeah, you'd be great at it.
I'd love to. I could do any accent. You just throw it at me. Yeah.
I'd buy body form if you were selling it.
Oh, body form.
Yeah.
Okay. What's here's you ready? Do you remember this old advert? Ready? Body form. Body form for you. Do you remember that?
Great. Was that you?
I wish that was an advert. That's it. I've got to tell the American. So in the UK, body form is a panty liner for the woman who has her menstrual cycle, and it's a woman running across the beach in a fucking tiny bikini, feeling fresh. Yeah. And that was the song that went over it. In body form, yeah. And as a kid, I was obsessed with singing that.
It was loud, and it was brilliant, and it was a great advert.
I think the
so inaccurate. You never run like that with body form.
I just imagine you now like doing it, being in like the mic booth, doing like that kind of stuff.
Oh man, I'd love to. I actually have a couple of radio plays in the UK.
Oh yeah,
but yeah, anyone listening who needs a
there's a lot of them.
Few voices.
That's it. This is why on my podcast I do so many jazz voices, because I'm hoping someone listens in at some point and hires me for everything. But no, I don't want to skip over Bill Murray.
Oh, Bill Murray. Okay.
Because he's my hero.
Yeah, and mine. And he was only on set for 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. They were the greatest moments of my life, almost. And he was awesome, man. He came up with some cool ideas. For anyone who has seen the show, it was his idea to have his wife, his dying wife, on stage with us, with him, in a wheelchair. And he, like, fed her from a straw and stuff. And, he had a lot. He lives in Charleston, so where we're filming. Yeah, so he had a lot of recommendations. Mm-hmm. Very complimentary.
Yeah.
said I packed a skirt team. Well. And he earns. What compliment? Anyone else would be like, you dirty dog. Yeah, Bill Murray's like, pack a skirt well. Thanks, love. creepy. No, he's cool, man. He was really awesome and has a lot of food recommendations. For anyone who wants to visit Charleston.
I feel like when I was in Charleston with you, and I feel like we went to some places that you were like, oh, Bill Murray said that this was good.
Yeah,
or you
literally. No. That's well remembered. That was literally Eric. I was gonna say Eric. Eric and I. You didn't come with us. Corin and I. We went. I had a Bill Murray list of like places to hit up.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went and looked him.
We also went to a really weird but good theatre thing.
Do you remember that?
Yes, there was and it was, well, we both wanted it to be brilliant. I think with a lot of good vibes.
Come on!
We went to, there's an art music theatre festival, isn't there, called the something.
Yeah, that's
cool.
It.
And we went to some interpretive art dance, and it was, do you know what? The first act of like five that there were, a lot of intermissions, was great. And then I remember, I think the one that we left afterwards was right near the end. That one person sort of moved his wrist back and forth to a ticking clock. It was very, very modern.
Oh my God.
Interpretive something or other.
And what was the rest of his body doing?
Nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
I wish.
Yeah, come on. Sitting.
But the other bits were brilliant. He stood and just sort of like did. I think someone walked slowly across the stage. Tick, tock. Tick.
It was infuriating.
But we were down for the rest of it. The rest of it was pretty cool.
There was one with cool balloons and stuff. I appreciate this isn't interesting for the audience.
Next question. Ding 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 ding.
Let's just have George make train sounds. Can you just do different kinds of trains?
I can't believe you got to hang with Bill Murray and that I didn't even know about Bourdain, and now I'm just all kinds of upset and
wildly,
jealous.
Like, imagine, so I was going to be back to England, and I came back to LA to actually to direct a music video for one of your singles.
True story.
And I came back, and the next morning, very early, I went to meet for vice principals, and I got it straight away. It was ridiculous.
So if it wasn't for me, you wouldn't have.
Thank you so much. You changed my life. And then I got it, and then like I'm packing a bag, watching Groundhog Day, and then I was there sitting in front of Bill Murray, watching baseball.
That's insane.
And so what? And obviously, I've spoken to you about it a lot, and I was lucky enough to meet him because I'm a big fan of his. But tell everyone listening what it's like to work with the legend that is Danny McBride.
He is the greatest.
Yeah,
he's brilliant, man. Yeah, you got to meet him. Wasn't he just like so generous and like
so cool.
Interested in who you are, and like he just cares about meeting. He's just a real dude. Like he is so welcoming and supportive and kind and very very clever. I think I think him, Jody, David, all the guys who run Rough House Productions are just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Because talking of like crazy directors too, David Gordon Green did season 2, which is coming up, and he didn't wear all denim, but my god would he have if anybody'd asked him to. He's brilliant. He will ask you questions that are so left field and you don't know what is happening, and you'll answer the obvious answer, but then you'll be like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
And he just throws the weirdest direction at you and keeps everybody on their toes and brings out the coolest. He's a real actor's director. Like he makes you try things that you would never dream of doing, and then you just have the coolest experiences, and he has the weirdest, most interesting ideas. I can't annoyingly tell you a few for season 2, but just like,
just a trailer.
You'll just see a specific character on set. You're like, why the fuck is that person here?
What's the life in the? I saw the trailer too. That they too shall be shot in their privates.
The
woman who shot me, they too will be shot.
Yeah,
in their privates.
That will have also. That'll be moment, Danny and he is so funny, and so is Walton. Like, but also talking of people doing.
Walton
Goggins,
by the way,
genius.
Love that dude. I was a huge
again,
Justified
another human,
fan. Justified, him and Timothy Olyphant were like maybe my favorite.
Yeah.
It was like, it's supposed to be get bad guy, good guy, but they were just two gray guys.
They
were just. Seeing those two guys play off each other, I was obsessed with that show. It's been 6 seasons, and I loved every second of it. And Walton Goggins, I know I'd seen him before, but I'd never taken him in. And then I was guy, this is the guy. Like
his face holds like a million emotions within just one shot.
I love when that
conniving and so. I don't know, it's great.
He's brilliant.
But when you see an actor like that, happened with me and like Michael Shannon too. I was who is this guy?
Fuck.
This guy. And there's just a show on, I don't even know what network it was on, but it was called Kingdom, and there's an actor named Jonathan Tucker. I can't take my eyes off this guy.
Yeah, no, Walton is unreal, man. And also, they all approach their... those guys have such an interesting way of approaching comedy that's so uniquely them. Mm. I'm talking about Danny specifically, and Jody and David, where they don't compromise the stories they want to tell, and they're not trying to be shocking, and they're not trying to be funny. They just have a way of telling stories. They actually approach everything sort of from a dramatic angle. Yeah. And, I mean, season 2 gets... dark. If you think season 1 is dark, it gets fucking
it looks like from the trailer it looks it almost looks like True Detective at some points.
We had a whole, as well as, so Jody did season 1, I think he did an incredible job. I loved working with Jody.
It's great.
And then David did season 2, so unlike Eastbound where they kind of oscillated between the two guys for different episodes, they both just had a chunk, so it does have a different, even the same school, it's like same characters, and you know it all so well, it does have a different vibe to it, which is kind of exciting from an acting point of view, but also from hopefully from a viewer's point of view.
Yeah.
And we had a new DP and a few new crew members, so it has a different look and feel to it. And like I said, so Jody's got this incredible, I don't want to do them a disservice and be like, Jody's good at cameras and David's good at acting, but they're brilliant in both. But David's will really like work on character stuff, I think, to a point, like I said, that's just like wild and weird and interesting. And then Jody has these great this great attention to camera work. So it's kind of, it was just a really exciting mix to work with both guys.
I feel like once you get to that, like actually making stuff, then like everyone who makes stuff and is not an asshole realizes that like it's not, it's never just one person.
It's not one person. Like, and they all, that's a really perfect point to make as well. Because also Danny, I must include as well, he directed an episode per season two, and they all had each other's backs, and these are the guys that went to college together, and that's like they're a family, and
it's
then
very collaborative from what I got.
Massive, and they just welcome everyone into their family. It's a family of people, and so to work with someone like Walton, who's just like a tour de force, like an extraordinary actor, truly. And then to be able to hang out with him afterwards, and him to be like the best human and be so interesting and interested.
Yeah,
there's a curiosity to all those guys as well, which I love. And Kimberly, I mean, the women on the set were unbelievable. Like, we all looked after each other, and I loved being able to watch Kimberly acting. She played Dr. Brown. Ashley Spillers, Edie Patterson, like Busy Phillips. Busy and Shea Whigham were slightly separate from us because they're part of his like other life.
Not part of the school.
But man, like, just what an absolute joy it was just to watch everybody on set, and everybody talking to Bill Murray, like everybody just went to set just to see Bill Murray. And that's such an unusual thing to like, to be able to like want to go to work is such a brilliant thing.
It was
really special.
That's so exciting. I'm so hyped to watch season two. When is it actually out?
What's the
September 17th.
This comes out before then. And
before we're nearly at the piss break, at the tradition of having a piss break 45 minutes in, but before we do, you mentioned your dad briefly before, and when I first met you, actually no, it was a bit after that, and we were talking about you directing the music video for Me, which is Me and My, for those that have seen it, and we were on Skype. It was Christmas time, you were at your parents' house, and your dad walks in and just gives a wave, and I was like, hey, hey, George's dad. And I didn't realise that until then that he was the hunter in Jumanji.
Yes, he is.
Oh my god, really?
Yeah, the fucking hunter in Jumanji. And he's also the dad.
Do you know,
it's the whole like father. Do you know that? He's the dad.
I watched that movie with my cousins at Thanksgiving for probably 10 years straight.
Did you really?
Wow. Yeah, I love that movie.
I do too. I'm Jumanji, very, very proud to be my dad's daughter.
He is so, like, he is the best. Because that's a PG movie. That's like a kid's movie. But he is like the best Venn diagram of threatening and funny at the same time.
Oh, he would be so. I agree, and I'm so stoked.
I love it when he's buying the gun at the gun shop. And
I was there for that scene. I was a chubby 8-year-old Georgia was there, going like, "What is happening, Dad's face?" Because he had all that like fake hair and he had the gold teeth on my dad's idea. And Sonny Jim, he does a lot of ad libbing and improv. My dad, and he's a fucking legend. He's the nicest, greatest human, and.
That blew my mind. I did not. I did not expect him to say it. I didn't know that at all.
Oh, you didn't know that?
No, I didn't. That's
so
cool.
We have different last names too, so it's not like I kind of go like, "Hi, the Hunter and Jumanji's daughter."
what is his last name?
Hyde, H-Y-D-E.
Okay.
Because for artistic reasons, he couldn't have King. And there's a radio DJ in the UK. Do you know about this guy, Jonathan King? Turned out to be a pedophile.
It's, of course.
Oh. Yes.
It's like so, Michael Keaton. Well, no, Michael Keaton has no pedophile in his changing names. Michael Keaton's name is Michael Douglas.
No, wait, Michael Keaton's real name is Michael Douglas.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, we'll check We'll check the phones during the piss break. But I'm pretty sure that Keaton's name was Michael Douglas, and he had to change it because of Michael Douglas.
That's totally awesome.
And he couldn't be Mike Douglas because there was a Mike Douglas news anchor. I'm pretty sure.
Whoa.
By the way, this might be.
Everybody start Googling it.
Perfect. Piss break juncture. So we'll be back shortly after urination.
That's so weird.
We're back after the piss break. Thanks for trying podcast. What a piss it was. Two wonderful guests. Pissed and had a cigarette, and we're not doing it for the first ever episode. Thanks for trying. We're not going to do a shot because we're in LA, and I'm drinking.
Also, because it's
we're drinking, not drinking much. It's only 2 in the afternoon. We're in LA. I'm a bit drunk anyway. And you guys are talking about Disney, because I don't want to interrupt you if you're talking about Disney, considering that we went to Disney anyway last week, so I know all about that life.
Yeah, I mean, it's the place of dreams. I was so skeptical. I was not... I was ready to hate it.
Yeah.
And I, like a loser, read a book when I was younger. What a loser. I thought, wait, let me finish. Gross. What a nerd. No, I read a book when I was younger called The Book of Daniel by E.L. Doctorow. Is that how you pronounce the name? Is it Doctorow? And there's a scathing review of Disneyland. It like parallels, it's like a metaphor for like some fucking shit. And yeah. I remember being like, yeah, as like an opinionated, naive child, being like, yeah, Disneyland is a place of shit. And then yeah, I went and it was the best thing ever, and I was so happy.
Did
and
you get
I
a picture with Mickey?
Did I?
Okay.
That big,
I wanked
that
Mickey up.
Big, big hulking brick of sex. No. I did meet Mickey. And we did everything. We did, is it called California Adventures? No, what's the other land called? Adventureland.
Adventures, she knows. Kim knows.
Good
California
God.
Adventures.
California Adventures. Yeah. It was so wonderful.
I can't wait though. I can't, like, I can't do that anymore. I'd rather what? Not go wait in line.
How?
My heart's content.
How'd you skip? We didn't get
this. Because I got hooked up. That was hooked up in normal voice. I got really excited.
You're the only one not drinking, and you sound insane.
Oh, that's great. Damn, but we had such a sick time. I'm afraid of roller coasters. I'm not afraid to say that. Like, I'll punch somebody in the face, but I'm scared of heights. That's all right. I'm okay with that.
See, I will go on a roller coaster and never punch someone in the face. Yin and yang.
Shit. But I thought I would challenge myself.
Which one fucked you
well,
up?
Well, we went onto the Guardians ride.
Oh, man.
But that's like a tower, right?
Yeah.
I always have I can't stop laughing when I'm on rides. Like,
right,
I cannot breathe
that's
for laughing
cute.
So hard.
And that's a fear thing?
No, I just joy. Just
joy,
happiness.
Sheer
so I could
joy.
Not stop laughing. And yeah. There was somebody next to me that was so upset. And so, and a man. I don't think he would punch anyone in the face, but... and to this day still says, to this day, it's only been a few weeks. To this very day, 3 weeks later, still says I shouldn't have done the fucking, that ride was the worst thing that ever happened to me.
The Guardians ride,
it was brilliant.
It was amazing, but so frightening
it's
for
terrifying.
Me.
Which song did you have? Do you remember? We had Jackson 5.
No, we didn't. I don't remember what song it was. I was too petrified that I don't really remember much. All I know is that when they take the photo right at the top, like, and this isn't a spoiler, but when you get right to the top before the final drop down there, it opens up onto the entire Disneyland, so you get to see the view of everything. And they take a photo, right? And the photo, Kim was there and she was just like in the photo and she's like, oh, yay! And the photo of me is like, I'm not a muscly guy, yeah, but I was gripping so hard that you could see
you're
every
jacked.
Muscle in my arm.
I look like
I was on steroids. Like, wow, well, was
so fucked. If you want to look good, you just scare yourself.
That's it. I was gripping I was aching.
I'm scared of heights too. I don't know why on roller coasters though. I just find it so funny. I skydived.
At the dove.
Where?
I
did
fucking skoodoved. It skoodoved me. In San Diego, and I didn't do any research on purpose and went with a big group of people.
And were you surprised that actually you had to dive in the sky?
It was absolutely horrendous. And we all had our guy, you get taken by somebody and they will run out of a little hut and they go like, hey, and they call out your name, and then you get paired up with your person that's going to jump out of the plane with you.
Yeah.
And my guy didn't arrive and everyone else was like going woo-woo and like getting on this tiny little tin can, I think, that apparently was a plane.
Yeah.
And then Fernando came out, my guy, half my height, and Fernando Jaja, and I was like, oh fuck, hello. and I was, because I was last in the tin can, I faced everyone going like, way, having fun, and then I was the first to jump out. But the last to come down.
Oh,
wait, how
Fernando
that?
Kept me up in the sky. He, because they control how long you're up there.
Oh,
and
I thought gravity did that.
And the pictures they took on that were very much like yours, I'm sure. Yeah. I've never looked more muscly and terrified.
How long do you think you're up there?
Oh, ages. I mean, he was whispering sweet nothings in my ear because they're wrapped around your back, and he had his. I said to somebody, wasn't it relaxing?
Feeling your button?
Yeah, feeling that big dick. No, I didn't say that. I said, wasn't it relaxing that they held you with their legs? And everyone's like, nope, just you.
Yeah.
And then he was like, you know, complimenting my accent. And I said, oh, isn't it isn't it nice that we all have accents? I'm trying to like diffuse the situation. But yeah, Fernando is very generous.
Wow, I bet.
Yeah, shit scary. I prefer Guardians of the Galaxy any day.
I would never jump out of a plane.
I just wouldn't, or I couldn't do that.
I don't know why the fuck I did.
Unless I had a Union Jack parachute and I was jumping off of a plane and I was in a suit that, or I was in like a scuba diving suit that unzipped and there was a tuxedo underneath. You know what I mean? Oh,
and
I was
fully, and I was DJing a pool party, and you were
And I was jumping in, and I had a fucking Wolf of PPK, and I was like fully James Bond. Basically, I will only do a skydive if I'm James Bond.
If you arrived into a venue that you were going to perform in
through the roof
and something like that, that
fighting off ninjas,
that'd be pretty good.
Do you know that Sean Connery was the first 007? Sorry, I just learned that yesterday. I didn't realize that.
Are you? Did you really just learn that yesterday?
I love him as 007, but I thought I thought some of the others had come before.
No, I thought there was one before.
God, Eric's like, get over it.
I'm really surprised. Also, during the pee break, I learned not only is Michael Keaton's real name Michael Douglas, but Albert Brooks's real name is Albert Einstein.
What?
Get the fuck out of here.
Isn't that crazy?
What?
No.
What? And my real name is Brad Pitt.
I knew it.
What are the fucking chances?
Fuck.
I love the idea that there's somebody cool and famous, and then someone else has their name, and they're like, I'm going to change it, and they also become cool and famous.
Wow. Mm.
Like, that's... I just think that's really cool.
What torment if you didn't, and you were like, you just heard your name, you dreamt of being a star, and then fucking Michael Douglas this, Michael Douglas that, and you can't get arrested. Oh, arrested as in, like, as in you can't, you, oh, I don't know. Edit that out.
That's that dwindled.
No, like, if someone's, like, a struggling actor can't even get arrested, to term with. I've heard once.
I've never heard that. That just means that you can't.
You literally cannot get work. You can't even get arrested. Wow. Oh, fuck, who knows? Next question.
Sorry.
All right. I actually had an interesting question for both of you. A flip side question, in fact.
That
actually came from Jason.
So stressful.
Excitement. For you, Georgia, the first part. I'll ask you both at the same time that you can discuss. For Georgia, it's how do you feel when you read a script for the first time compared to Eric? How do you feel when you first hear your script being read for the first time by an actor? Like, what's the what do you both look for? What is there any sensibilities that you're kind of like you work together on it? Do you change it? Like,
well, from an acting point of view, when you read a script for the first time, it's you're on your own. It's very intimate and private. But there's almost like a litmus test for me, which is like, how many times has my brain started to wander away from this script? How many times have I stopped and put it down? Because it's you're reading a film, so it's like a long, there's like at least an hour and a half of reading, 2 hours. Have I needed to use the bathroom? Do I remember those characters afterwards? How do I feel by it? Am I moved? Am I amused? Am I whatever it is? Is this is it original? Is it exploring something that I care about? I also like can't help but taking myself out of like the role that I'm reading for, just looking at all those characters and how real are they and how human is it, and then the character that I am going to hopefully audition for or read for, I do wonder like how exciting would it be to play this character. Could I run with this? Could I bring something to the table? Those are all
great,
the multitude of questions actor must ask themselves.
Have you ever read something and been like, oh, I'm supposed to be this person? I want to be this person.
Oh, all the time.
All the time?
Yeah. In fact, I actually accepted a job once because I got confused as to which character had been...
No,
I'm not kidding. And I went, yeah, I'll fucking do that. And then I had said yes to the wrong character. But it was still fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
When did you realise?
On set.
It was right when I first began.
Whoa.
So I just did a pilot that we were just talking about it actually in the pee break with the Diablo Cody wrote.
Can you talk about the pilot? Is it right?
So, okay, cool. And she's like,
and that's Diablo Cody from Juno, who wrote Juno.
Oh yeah, no big deal, but Oscar winner. Yeah, like amazing writer and human. And her writing is so brilliant that I didn't think of anything for a long time, like during, after. It was completely transported to that world and that character and that that environment, and that's the best when you get when you can lose yourself or something, just like an audience, basically.
And so to tell me from your side then, Eric, like, what's it like when you see an actor come on set and they think they're reading for both parts?
when we first met.
I've not had that. But from seeing people perform my stuff, like, I feel like at first, for like a pretty long while, it was just like a gape, like, I can't believe that something's getting made. You know, like, then we're like, I was just kind of like dumbfounded and like appreciative, and how it's like that, like your whole little like team of emotions inside you is just like all high-fiving, like, oh, we did it, we got something done. And then, like, as I got more used to the fact that, like, I have a job to do on this, it's kind of like it depends on how it goes. Like, sometimes there's just this great satisfaction of somebody doing it exactly how I thought they would, and it plays as good as I thought. Sometimes there's like they do it how I thought they would and it doesn't, and I'm like, oh shit, like something what I thought was good is not working, and it's my job to fix it. The most terrifying is probably when they do it a different way and it's not working, and I'm not the director, I'm the writer, and I'm like, that's falling flat. Like, how do I politically kind of nudge people, because you don't want to give an actor a line.
Like, or can, is there people that you can talk to just to?
It's kind of, it's a thing where, like, I like, hey, like a first take, they'll do something, and it'll miss, and I'll be like, okay, let's see if they fix it. And the second take, if it's the same miss, then I'm like, if it happens again,
I've
talked to the director or the producer and just be like, I think this was supposed to be like that. And pretty much all, normally I'd say 80% of the time the director or producer fixes it on their own, and I'm just like, oh, thank God. I can remain sitting down because I don't want to, like, you know, you don't want to be, it's just like a weird political thing. But the best thing ever is like even the first line of Thor, Hemsworth, who's great, comes out and reads it completely different than how I thought, and it was better. Like, I had him saying this first line is a simple line. And I was like, this will be funny in my head. And then he does it a different way, and it was just better. And I was like, awesome. Oh, great. Like, glad this guy's the star. He's going to be plussing nonstop throughout this whole thing.
And it's, so I, like, have been lucky to be on a lot of jobs where I get to play and improv and ad lib and change stuff. How is that from a writing point of view? How do you feel when people change your words? Do you feel like
it's tricky bothered sometimes. By it,
or are you excited to see what they bring? Or because I,
for the most part, like, it's, I think it's the weirdest thing is like getting swept up, because like I just love the world of like theater, movie stuff, like people playing around, having fun, doing stuff. So like normally when some people start out improvising the scene, it's just like, okay, we're having fun. Like, everyone seems like they're having fun. This is rarely have I seen, at least, improvs just completely bomb. Like, normally people are like,
I have seen it. I'm just kidding. And but it was
like,
me.
But even if it doesn't work, like, okay, that everyone knows it didn't work, and everyone's laughing, like, wow, you took a big swing and a miss, but like, we're cool. Like, we're gonna keep going. It's fun, and we're all having fun here. So like, it's hard not to get swept up into that. And sometimes it's just like I feel like once you're a writer in production, you kind of have to be like the guardian of the whole document.
Sure.
And sometimes it can, like, a scene will be improvised and it'll hit everything you need to hit, because like I think a lot of times people, you're so actors direct, they're so in their craft, they're in the scene, right? That's the scene of the day. It's my job to stay back and be like, here's the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, I feel that's where I feel like the most confident going in and being like, hey, you guys are having fun, you're doing great, but like, this line here, it's a major plot point. Like, we got to hit that, and we got to hit it with somewhere in the ballpark of this tone.
Yeah.
So like, keep doing what you're doing, but like, remember that, because otherwise we're going to get into editorial and the movie is going to be like, wait, why is all this stuff happening?
Because
so like that
and it's great tricky, because there's certain films that I watch where people brush over major plot points and it frustrates me, or they mention them with such little candor or like no expression behind them, and you're like, wait a sec, what do you mean that guy's not your real dad? What? That's the whole point.
Yeah.
You talking about Star Wars?
Yes.
I haven't seen it. No, he is his dad. Just kidding. Danny was like that too. Actually, Jody and David, they would have us make, they would make sure that we shot the actual script and then we would play afterwards. They always had it.
Yeah.
As a back. And honestly, also the other pitfall with improv, there's so many pluses to it, but the other pitfall is what's very funny in the moment between you and somebody else on set doesn't always translate in the edit and can be too long. Improv runs can be can just be too kind of self-serving.
Well, it's the blessing and the curse too, because you're having you're in your own world and you're having so much fun,
right?
And then you don't, you're like, oh right,
so you can find stuff and you keep it very fresh. And I hate when things are for my taste, when I've over prepared anything. Not that I'm lazy, but I'll do a bunch of work that isn't to do with the actual dialogue.
Yeah.
So when I come to it, it doesn't feel like I am like wooden and this is, you know. So I'm a big fan of doing improv as long as it serves the plot and the characters, and it's not like just me getting a little too indulgent.
Yeah. Also, like those moments of like the famous moments you hear of people like screwing with actors, like in Empire Strikes Back. Spoiler alert.
Like, you ain't seen it, brand new Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, but like, you know, when they're doing the whole I am your father, like they told him 30 minutes before. Like his line, like that was, he had a different
line. That's amazing.
He had a different line that was like, you killed my father. And, or I forget what Darth Vader's response was, but he just kind of went up to him before. He was like, by the way, like this is the line. Like, and so everything that he's, you think about it, Mark Hamill's been spending this whole time like, I'm facing my ultimate nemesis tonight.
That's awesome.
Like,
you're
completely against me. And then he gets it, so like all of his confusion as an actor and everything is in there of just like, I wasn't ready for this.
That's
awesome. I wasn't ready for this moment, and it's the same thing for the character, and like it's so great.
And that's the same with Raging Bull, when he says like, you fuck my wife. He couldn't get the Scorsese couldn't get the right reaction, so he did you fuck my mother. No, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Fuck it, who knows? But it was like he fucked around with him, so you got that weird reaction of anger, and I love that. That's cool.
Yeah, I think that all that stuff is so fun. Like, you hear those stories. I'm obsessed with those stories.
David did that a bunch. He did things like, he shouted out to me to do something, I remember, in an old lady voice for some reason. But even though it won't be used in a million years, it made everybody, it loosened everybody up and kind of like, it was just, a smart director will do stuff to people.
Fucking hell.
No, that's wonderful. But we're nearly at the end of the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 17. Live, but not so live, from LA, from Hollywood, in fact. We're actually in Hollywood right now. We can see the Hollywood sign from the other window, not from this window. We can just see some buildings from here. But is there anything else you want to say? Obviously, Vice Principals is coming out very soon, like in a matter of weeks, for season 2. Thor Ragnarok is not out till November, annoyingly.
November 3rd.
November 3rd.
I'm so excited to see it, and I'm pissed off I have to wait that long. But I'm excited, and I can't wait to see your name on the screen. That's going to be.
Are going to have fun with it. I think they're going to have a lot of fun with this movie.
I can't wait.
You can watch the trailer, it's cool.
Done.
Yeah,
right,
I just, you know, I can't wait. I can't wait for that. And also, because it is this.
Wait, I want to talk about something.
Yeah.
Have you heard his album, his new album yet? Has he sent you that?
You haven't sent it to me.
No, maybe I haven't.
Dude.
Oh.
Come on now.
It's. The wife is upset. I mean, I like it a lot. The wife can't stop listening to it.
Wow.
Yeah. It is super cool. It is. Like, I don't know how to compliment without insulting. Like, I can't even believe that you were.
Like, you did this?
You made it.
Yeah, how dare you?
Oh, I can't wait. When's that out?
September 29th, yeah. Oh. So it's,
This is perfect, guys. You think about it. 17th, boom. That'll keep you going until Corinne's album's out.
That's it.
Yeah.
And then Thor, boom.
Vice Principals.
Happy Christmas.
This is where it gets good.
And then the world ends.
And then that's it. That's the end of the world. No, I appreciate that. Yeah, no, the video will be out in a couple of weeks, maybe even when this podcast is out. I don't even know when it's out. But make sure you go pre-order it and do all that.
Corey and I were having a funny conversation the other night, because I had just listened to his album all the way through 2 times, and I was complimenting him. I could see him getting all squeamish. I was like, you're not good at taking compliments, are you? He goes, no, but I need them.
Spoken like a true Brit as well.
Yes. I feel the same way though. Like, as soon as people start giving me compliments for something, I'm like immediately deflecting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I'm like, don't stop. Why are you going to stop?
Give me a compliment, one of you. This is how I react.
Georgia, you were wonderful in The New Normal.
Thanks, go fuck yourself. Thank you, what?
Well, it's a perfect place to end it before the thing runs out anyway. Yeah. Georgia May King and Eric Pearson, you've been wonderful and wonderful friends, and I love you both, so big up.
You have been listening to the Thanks for Trying podcast, episode 17, starring Georgia King and Eric Pearson. Big thank you to my guests. Big thank you to Jason and Whitney for letting me record in their house. Big thank you to Kim for recording it. And do not forget, this beat right now you're listening to is for a song called Keep It Simple, taken from my forthcoming album, This Is Where It Gets Good. That is out on September 29th. Go onto iTunes, go pre-order it now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.